Good evening, everybody, and welcome again to another virtual 67 Pall Mall edition. My name is Cecilia, and I'm very happy tonight to introduce again Jasper Morris, Master of Wine, who will be talking about heading to the back country of the Côte d'Aubon. Luciata with another side, share with us what are you drinking and where are you drinking it from, and don't forget to put your photos on social media with your hashtag 67 from home. As usual, we will have 15 minutes at the end to ask the question. So hello, Jasper. Fantastic.
Hello. How are you today, Cecilia?
Very well. Thank you so much. How are you doing?
Yeah, all right. It's no longer having daylight outside when we do these Zooms. And Burgundy's got a little bit sadder than it was because we've been put in lockdown. We're under a curfew. Nobody's allowed outside after 9 p.m. So the restaurants can't really open. Not so much fun. The mood's a bit gloomier. The weather's been fairly wretched in October, but actually that's important because we need the rainfall.
Exactly. But it's a good opportunity to see you explain these beautiful wines.
Yes, absolutely. Because what we thought we were going to do tonight, we've had a few Grand Crus. We've got more Grand Crus before the end of the year. And the purpose of this evening is finding what's really fun in terms of affordable Burgundy. And so we will kick off looking at the three villages from what I've called them the back country. We don't like to call them the less prestigious appellations. This is quite a debate within the Hospice de Beaune. I just did my first tastings of some of the Hospice de Beaune wines this morning, including a white Saint-Romain and the red Auxiliaires and the red Montelis. But we need to try and find a way to describe them all. So we call them the good value appellations, if you like. And what's nice is that these are the appellations which are getting more interesting with global warming, because they were tucked away a little bit. They didn't always ripen their grapes properly. Now it's that much easier to do so. So there are whites and reds from all the villages. We've gone with playing a 2-4 formation tonight, two whites, four reds. We will see where that takes us. Please do keep the chat going on the side. Let us know how you're getting on. I hope that several of you have got the wines. And also don't hesitate to ask questions on the Q&A or indeed in the chat. And I will endeavor to answer those as we go through, or if not, towards the end. Good. I'm feeling thirsty tonight. So that's encouraging. Cecilia, maybe you could put a map up for us, and then we can talk about the three villages, because they do all run one into the other. Now, I hope there are no mistakes in this map, because in fact, this is a first draft of the redone map from my book, ready for the second edition, because we made some mistakes first time around, and I hope we've got it right. So the color schemes, Saint-Romain is at the top in this light turquoise color, bluey green color. Auxiliaires is mostly in this lightish, somewhere between brown and maroon, unless it's a Premier Cru, in which case it's in orange. And Montelis is in the light green plus the orange. We might change those colors later on. It's got the green of the forest. It's all a bit complicated. And so then to situate that in relationship to the rest of Burgundy, most of the Côte d'Aubon, the famous vineyards, run along here, Volnay, here's Meursault, and then obviously if you continued, you've got the Pulinies and Chassagnes down there, and you've got the Pommards and Beaunes there. So they're all on the main escarpment and can see the early morning sun being east-facing. Whereas, we're now mostly going up a side valley. If you were sitting right out in the plain, you would hardly see any vineyards in these villages except the first bits of Montelis and just possibly some of these Auxiliaires vineyards here. So there's a river which you can see in the green, which I'm going to follow down here, in green, in blue, the color for a river, with a branch up there. And they're coming down out of the hillside. Seems to have various names. It's called the Ruisseau des Clous on this particular map. It's also called Lavelle by the time it gets into Auxiliaires. And then it continues on, and eventually, like all the other rivers coming out of these hillsides, down they go to join the River Saône. We're going to start with the two whites, of course. I've chosen one from Saramah and one from Auxey-Duresse. Then we'll do the Saramah red, then we'll do two Montlhy reds and the Auxey-Duresse red last. As far as the reds are concerned, I've just done them in straightforward vintage order. The two whites are both 2017, which, as you know, is a lovely, lovely vintage for white Burgundy, which, if anything, we appreciate more today than when it was born, because when it was born, it was one of those years that was a little bit of frost damage and everybody was a bit uncertain. But now we're pretty happy with 2017. We think it's a worthy follow-on to 2014. It's not quite as intense as 2014, but it's got everything in the right balance. And it was one of those rare these days vintages where the picking date wasn't that crucial because the window was a little bit more wide open. Right, so we're going to start with I think I'll talk about the detail of the layout of Saramah and the vineyards when we come to the reds, because the red is a single vineyard wine, whereas the white is not. The white is, if we can move on, seems to Alain Gras, if you please, Cecilia. There he is, looking very cheerful. I could colour in a bit of hair on top, if you like. He's coming up to retirement. He's been in place since 1979. His son Arthur is taking over. He has two daughters as well who are older than Arthur or Arthur, but one's a lawyer and one's a banker, I think, or maybe one's a doctor. So anyway, they're earning plenty of money and they don't need to go into the wine business, and it's the youngest of the children, Arthur, who's going to take over. I reckon Alan's probably got quite a long retirement ahead of him, because his father René Gras was still working in the vineyards into his mid-80s. His grandfather lasted to 96 or 98, and his great-grandfather, Hippolyte, lasted to over 100. So the air in Saramah is pretty good, which may be also why that there are two tonneliers or barrel coopers, most famously François Frère, who operate out of Saramah, because the air is nice and clean and clear and very good for the air drying of your wooden staves. Saramah, in fact, is two villages. There's the regular one, which is sort of halfway up the slope, and then there is the top village around the old castle, the old chateau, and that's where Anna is. And he's obviously done quite well for himself, because over the years he started with his house and his winery up there, but he's now got a little row of houses, and they have the most marvellous view across all the vineyards of Saramah. So when I'm talking, it's not so easy to follow your chat, but I can see that there's a lot of social energy going on amongst all you regulars. I'm looking at it now, and it doesn't sound as though anyone's having very good weather. It's been miserable here today, but I don't think it's actually raining at the moment. Good, right, on we go. And as someone's pointing out, I've taken my tie off. I was doing a webinar for the Hospice de Beaune in the middle of the day today, and I thought I'd better be on my best behaviour. Put a tie on so that people didn't recognise me. Okay, so now we will, I'm just going to take a little look. I've got the wine here in my glass. Alain Gras 2017 Saramah. You'll see that it has no vineyard designation. He owns a lot of Saramah. Most of it is in Sous-le-Château, just below where his house is. But he doesn't go for any designation. He finds it much simpler just to make one wine and sell one wine. And then if people want a lot, they can have a lot. If they only want a case, they can have a case, whatever. He does have a couple of other vineyards. He's got one Mercer vineyard. He's got one white Auxey-Duresse, and he's got red Saramah red Auxey-Duresse. But it's really just a dead simple philosophy. In terms of making it, all his wines for the whites go a proportion into brand new oak, and a proportion go into stainless steel. And it depends on the wine. So the Mercer is 50-50, the Auxey-Duresse is 30 new oak, and the Saramah is 20% new oak. And so that's what we've got here, 20% new oak. The rest is in tank, on its lees, in its time in tank, and that gives it a little bit of a reductive tint. So Looking at this wine, it's a palish colour. It's just absolutely correct for white Burgundy. We're spinning it now, and we've got that little bit of Gunflint reduction, which goes with the natural austerity and leanness of old-style Saramah. The new oak, I suspect, it's not showing on the nose, it's going to just bolster it and give it a little bit more weight on the palate. Didn't take it out of the fridge early enough. It's a tiny bit cold. Yes, indeed it does. Add a little weight. What we expect for Saramah up to now, and perhaps changing a tiny bit in the last three vintages, is a wine which is going to deliver you this lean, austere, but fresh and tangy and invigorating Saramah. Not so much a food wine, more an aperitif on the sort of days when you want a bit of a cold shower, a bit of invigoration. And as somebody has just remarked on the chat, that the acidity is pretty strong here. Alain would be happy with that, is what he's aiming to do. It's deliberately the style of the wine. I'm happy with that too, but of course you're not going to want to do that style of wine every single day. It's done when it says on the tin, yeah. Good, well done, Ella. Somebody who I probably met in my first year of doing visits in Burgundy in 1981, so I've known him for 40 years. It'll be really interesting to see what his son does. Just a little tidbit, when I was talking to Ella earlier this year, when I was going on my walks around some of the less well-known villages, but he says that he tends, when he needs to treat his vineyards, go out and spray them, that's to say, put a copper sulfate dose on. These days, he gets up at 3 a.m. and does it all between 3 a.m. and 7 a.m. And that way, he can put the treatment on without the hot sun on it. Because if you put your sulfur mixture on the vines when the sun is hot, they're going to frazzle the leaves and possibly even the grapes. So you can see he's a vigorous man who's enjoyed his 40 plus years working in the vineyards. Lovely. Well, I'm going to ask for the map back, and then we'll take a little look at wine number two. So in Osier Duress, now there are three parts to Osier Duress. There are three villages even. There is Osier Le Grand, the big Osier, which is, let me get my weaponry out. Use my little heart system. So Osier Le Grand is down here. Best known possibly for housing Maison Le Roi, where the Négociant Le Roi business is run from. Also, Madame Le Roi has her Domaine d'Auvenay up in the hills, very close by Saramah, in fact. The second village is the Petit Osier, which is here, tiny hamlet with some really old houses in it, old church. And the third is another hamlet called Menin up there. So you've got two main white areas and one main red area, which we can draw rings around. So up here, you can be both colors, but as you can see, you're really quite a long way back up the valley. And this green bit below is a large hillside. So you're not getting, even if it is an east-facing vineyard, you're not getting the early morning sun at all. You've got this section here, which is also mostly white. And the interesting thing about this, I'll just get rid of those rather ugly splotches, is that you're a continuation of Meursault. So the Meursault hillside, which was facing east, begins to face a little bit northeast. You get around to Les Viroyes, Les Louchets, vineyards like that. And once you come around here over the border into Osier Duress, you are beginning to get some definite north in the picture, as well as it's still a tiny bit of east, but you're northeast almost to north. I think north is probably, north. I don't seem to have got it marked on this map. So you're east, northeast or northeast when you get round at that part. But it's a really good hillside, very similar in style to the upper slopes of Meursault. And you'll see here is Les Vireux, which is the Osier Duress spelling of Les Viroyes in Meursault. you have Les Hôtes, Les Macabres, Les Boutonniers. Those of you who know Benjamin Leroux's Hôtes Durrës, that's where he sources his grapes. There's one up here, Les Closeaux, which has still got some red grapes in. But broadly speaking, people are looking to make whites here. It's a terrific value area for white Burgundy at the moment. You also have the whites up here. And in fact, our wine tonight is coming from this vineyard here called Les H-O-Z. Oz or Hoz, well, I'm not really quite sure how you pronounce it. Maybe the Z doesn't get pronounced. And that belongs to Agnès Paquet. She was doing other things with her life, but in around 2000, her parents said, well, we've got this 5-hectare vineyard, we're not doing anything with it, it's being leased out, I think we'll sell it out. And that caused Agnès, who'd known this vineyard all her life, to think, oh, I really want that to happen. And she said, no, stop. I'm going to give up what I'm doing and I'm going to come and take over that vineyard. She's got various other vineyards, a lot of which are négociants, they're contracts, they might be rent farming contracts. Indeed, some with some people in Hampshire who have a vineyard near Stockbridge and Cottonworth. And they also have some vineyards in Burgundy as well. And they're good friends with Agnès. She also does a lot of the élevage, the tending of the barrels for the Hospice de Beaune in recent years. A very good thing all round. I will leave discussing the other Hôtes Durrës vineyards until we come to the red wines, because it's this section down here which much more refers to red. So I'll wait till then, we'll come back on that. Maybe we can have a little look at Agnès Paquet. She also runs a little gîte guest room. Oh, yeah. Here, first of all, is the picture of some of the Hôtes Durrës vineyards. I always like that little folly gazebo in the vineyards. What you can see in the background are the vineyards that have just come over the shoulder, if you like, from Meursault. So just along here, that ridge divides Hôtes Durrës from Meursault, and then they start sliding down here and facing a little bit more to the north, as already discussed. And in fact, I went on my walk here just a few, not this last Sunday, the Sunday before, I walked up to the top of the Meursault vineyards, Les Clous, and I sat there on a ledge and I called up a good friend of mine who's sadly very ill in hospital and had a chat with him. Beautiful day with the blue sky like this. And he wasn't too well, but everything else seemed good out in the vineyards in the sun. And then if we can move on the next slide. There is Agnès. She looks as though she's a bit red in the face like me, but actually it's the local local lighting there, or the reflection of her red scarf. That was one of my early morning tastings, 8 a.m. Tasting with her. She also does, as well as her reds and whites, a very nice sort of pet nat sparkling wine made out of aligoté called Ali Bois-Bois, Bois-Bois being joke on Baza, and Bois-Bois meaning drink. Ali Bois-Bois and the 40 drinkers. What a very, very amusing concept, but it's lovely wine too. She's, I think, about half and half between reds and whites. Let me pour it while I'm talking. You will see that it's called Patience number 10. Patience because out of this vineyard, she makes a regular cuvée, which gets bottled before the harvest, and one which she puts in slightly younger barrels, 350-litre barrels from François Frère, and she ages it for longer. So it's bottled nearer Christmas the year after the harvest instead of before the next harvest. And so patience for waiting longer. It's number 10 because I think it's the 10th vintage she does it. I'm sure that's the explanation because I can see that the 2018, which is what's mostly being sold at the moment, is patience number 11. So Mark has asked a question about Saruman growers. Remind me to come back on that, Mark, when we look at the red wine, as I've now moved on to Hôtes Durrës. But yes, there is some ambition on that. Yeah. So my work is being at least partly down on the chat by all you enthusiasts who know such a lot about wine, adding in with your own recommendations, which is great news. Please continue so to do. So this is a wine with a little bit more oak effect in it, because the other just had 20%. This, if I remember rightly, has got a 30% new wood, and the rest is older wood, so it's slightly more oak effect. 12 months in barrel, 4 months in tank. And she feels, as I would also agree, is that that version of giving it a few months in tank after the 12 months in barrel tends to give you a little bit more refinement, a little bit more precision. I get less bouquet. I get less of the gunflint reduction, but I get a noticeably richer fruit, almost into the yellow Mirabelle plums, which I like to talk about when I feel the fruit is ripe enough, coming in on this wine. But again, there's good acidity. But we are definitely much more in the sphere of food wines here. So I think that she is one to follow. Before we finish tonight, we can work through various recommendations of other options. In the past, the growers in these villages tended to be more in the good old boy style, without the most sophistication, shall we say, and they tended to sell their wines either at local restaurants or to lots of passing French people or other tourists, rather than being well developed in the export trade. I must say that when I started out as a young wine importer, all starry-eyed, I wanted to have producers in every village. But more recently, it's become a little bit more difficult insofar as that so many of the top growers in the famous villages have all got one example. You have a Lafond Montelly, you have a Costurio Sedures, you have and so on and so forth, Saramin from De Monti. But you can find lots of these side villages, if you like, examples from the most famous producers. So attention has moved away, people short of time, not taking the time and energy to go and discover the small villages. Now with the inflation of prices from the top producers, I think things are changing a little bit again. And now there is a definite interest in going up the side valley here and looking at these producers. That should be fun to do one in Savigny-les-Bains as well, as I'm developing further discoveries in those villages. So maybe that will come up in the new year. Right, two very different white wines. I don't know if anybody wants to offer an opinion on these. I'm very happy with those two whites in really quite different styles. Any more comments? We could talk a little bit about Montelly on the whole. I'm not much of a fan of the whites of Montelly. I think they have been planted for the reason that people had got too much red and wanted to have something else in their offer. There are a couple of vineyards I could point to when we get to Montelly. Look at the map. I'll show a couple of places where you might make a decent white Montelly, but typically I would prefer Montelly to stay red. I think Auxerre-Duras, they got the balance very nicely, not against where they have whites. And the reds have been a tougher sell, but getting easier perhaps. And Saramin, weirdly enough, it began as an almost white appellation. It didn't get its appellation until after the war in 1947, when the then mayor, Roland Thévenin, managed to persuade the authorities that Saramin should be added. It was mostly white. And then people began planting a lot more red because they wanted to drink more red. And only now is it beginning to swing a little bit back more towards the white again. But I think most people in export markets are thinking of Saramin as a white wine appellation. Good. Dominic has given a very nice assessment of those two whites. Okay. Where do we go to next? Cecilia, I think we have another look at the map, do we not? Because we're back to Saramin. And now I'm going to go into this in a little bit more detail. I hope you can see the map clearly enough. What I am going to do is draw a little bit the contours, or at least the rough shape. So we have got one hillside here, and we have got an a circus, an amphitheater here, which then continues on round there. So that's the sort of the shape of the slopes, if you like. So you've come up below on the road up from Ossey Durres is the way you're most likely to have approached. You could also approach from the top village. You come through the back country, the Oakcote villages like Menoise, come out of the back of Pommard, around that way. But many people, you'll get to Saruman by coming up from Ossey Durres. And you've gone into this tight, narrow valley. The first thing you'll see on your right is Le Gérant, small vineyard, but actually they have just got permission to expand it into this area here, which at the moment you can see is forest. In fact, it's scrubland. And there's about another 12 or 15 hectares there, which is now being authorized to become Saruman. As with Marcenais, they want to make sure they've got the village boundaries right for Saruman before they consider Premier Cruz. It's not a slam dunk, but it is a movement towards having some Premier Cruz, but I get the impression not everybody in the village is in favor of it. And I think we're quite a long way away from it happening, but it'd be a surprise if we don't hear a lot more along these lines. Now, if we follow this curve round beyond my heart, you can see how it moves off to the right there. And that effectively means that these vineyards, where I am now, Combe Bazin and Sous Roche, they're basically west-facing. And typically, they have been planted much more with Pinot Noir. And we're going to have a Pinot Noir from Combe Bazin. They're on brilliant steep slopes. That whole little amphitheater gets the sun pretty well for a village that's hidden back here. And we're clearly higher up now. The lowest vineyards in Saruman are over 300 meters above sea level, and the highest go over 400. They're very steep slopes. So Mark, you just mentioned that you picked Le Gérant this year. I checked with your boss, whose grapes you were picking, to see whether you'd done a good job or not. And he gave you a pretty good report card, you'll be pleased to hear. Other reds may well come from these slopes over here, on Poilange and La Perrière, spelled a bit differently from other Perrière. There are certainly some reds there. So excluding my first heart, which is for Gérant, those would be the red parts. And then the very best of the whites are Sous le Château here. I mean, that is the sort of the number one bit, and also perhaps Sous la Velle, which means under the village. Velle, we're going to keep coming across Velle. In all three of these villages, we'll come across the word Velle, and it is an abbreviation in Burgundy peasant speak for village. So if you're Sous la Velle, you're underneath the village. There's one in Merceau as well. Okay, so we can move on a slide, please, Cecilia. And I can show you our next, in quality terms, I wouldn't have these people as our openers for red because I think they're absolutely sensational. Slightly weird focus here because my camera was trying to doing something panoramic. So this was the lineup when I tasted the 2018s here at the beginning of the year, hoping to go back and taste the 2019s. We've got Fred there, who is the younger of the two brothers and is the winemaker. And we've got Frank there, who is the older brother, evidently, and is more on the marketing side. But they both work really closely together. It's a terrific relationship. They are the, Alain Grey, I didn't mention, was, I think, the fifth generation of his family. And I think that Fred and Frank are somewhere pretty much up there. Probably got a note on that somewhere. They're the eighth generation. Sorry, I do them down. So we know that there have been buissons as vignerons in the village of Saruman since the 12th century. And then we know that they have definitely been involved as vignerons rather than just actually living there. Since 1758 is the earliest record that they can find. There are other buissons, there's a Christophe Buisson as well. But the domain is named for the brothers, their father, who is Gilles, and their grandfather, who is Henri. And Henri began domain bottling as soon as Saruman got its appellation in 1947. Gilles then increased from a sporadic handful of vineyards up to 14 hectares by the 1980s. And then Fred and Franck, as they came together in the early 2000s, They've developed more, they've rented a few vineyards, they've got over 20 hectares now, and importantly, they've taken the domain organic, biodynamic, close to sulfur-free, but they're not out where the buses don't run sort of natural winemakers. They are very, very much sort of reasoned natural winemakers, and certainly I've never tasted a wine with any form of deviation from them. They're quite careful not to. So they start out without sulfur during the vinification, and then they will add it thereafter if they think it's necessary, but they will try and make a cuvée or two, which they call absolute, which won't see any sulfur at all. And the choice had to be made, were we going to do an absolute one? And I just thought, if they're going to be put into the sample bottles and then sent possibly all around Europe in a shortish space of time, I wouldn't risk an absolute. And instead I've gone for Combazin, which is probably, I apologize for a second, just leave the screen, get another glass, which is one of their principal red wine vineyards. And in fact, this vintage, 2015, when I tasted it, I went absolutely nuts for it. 2015, 2018, when I tasted it, the five came into my brain because this is one of my rare five-star wines. So let's hope it's going to live up to standard. The three main domains you'll find in Saramar are Alain Gras, we talked about, as the classic, if you like. Buisson as really pushing the boundaries and I think making great wine. And also, perhaps even wilder and more natural, there is Fred Cossard of Domaine de Chassonnet, who I haven't yet visited, is strongly on my wish list, but I haven't got there yet. So I went for one of the Buisson wines instead. Right, so rich, dark color, very lively. We expect dark colors in 2018 and 19 and 20. Possibly in years gone by, you would have struggled to get this sort of color in Saint-Romain without punching down and plunging and really extracting so much that you would get some unripe tannins as well. So this is on Milestone facing west, quite high up. Theirs is at the top of the slope here at 360 meters. It's a little bit higher, the slope on the other side. Lots of small stones. Really, really loving the perfume of this wine. If it smells properly ripe without exaggeration. What can I say? Very, very happy to sign up for that. Whole bunches. They are about one third whole bunches in this. And I can taste that actually. It seems to not just enliven, but also lengthen the finish to me. The bouquet doesn't give me a lot in the way of whole bunches, but the wine on the palate does. And there's the purity that you get when you are able to vinify without sulfur, but you can keep control. Because, you know, I'm ambivalent about the natural movement insofar as there are too many wines where people have not managed to keep control. But if you can do it this way and keep control, then hats off. Brilliant. Alistair, on the five-star thing, the stars are for the potential within an appellation. So the score is the, out of 100, is the absolute, if you like. And the stars are, I think that is as good as Saramar Red can possibly be. So that's what brings me the five stars. Because I got fed up with some really, really super wines from minor appellations being ignored because they were getting scores in the 80s, because obviously they weren't as grand as the Bon Marche and Bethanque Lodebert, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the basis behind how I do my star ratings. Yeah, the bouquet is going to come out much more as this wine ages. It's still a little bit restrained. I'm not sure that I'm aware of other people who are doing much in the way of single vineyard red Saramars. I know that they do make several. I think it's something like three or four different reds and six or eight different whites. And they were hardly doing anything in the UK market, given that I suspect our audience tonight has plenty of people, not exclusively from the UK, but plenty are. But the intrepid chaps at Swig have started shipping them all, and I understand they're having a good success with them. Okay. Just to say that, you know, I'm being positive and punchy about these wines, because when we decided on the theme, I was able to choose the wines from producers I knew I was going to like. But obviously these days I have absolutely no commercial interest in wine or wine companies whatsoever. So it is just an enthusiasm for what I'm tasting in the glass. Great. Everybody happy? I see I have a second question. We've done the whole bunches and we've done the Premier Grand Ambitions. So I'm up to speed on the questions. How long would I keep this wine? You don't need to keep it a vast amount of time, but I think there is more fruit to come out. There is more bouquet to come out. It will probably actually even sort of deepen on the palate. So optimum drinking, I don't think Saramas are very long term, but let's say 3 to 5 years from here hits the optimum. And then if you are a classic English necrophiliac on wines, you can probably keep it longer. I don't think it will fall away. But equally, I'm not sure that the reds of Saramas have got the ability to develop significant additional layers later on, would be my feeling. Doubtless, as years go by and if global warming continues, we will be proved wrong. Incidentally, Saramas is just one of the most beautiful villages. So is Montlhéry, for that matter. So if you are in the region, it would be great to explore up there. Okay, we're ready to move to Montlhéry, so we can have, before we go, here is Saramas, clear those hearts out of the way. What you can see, the houses you can see at the top are the top village. Probably most of the houses you can see at the top belong to Alain Gras. The old chateau would be over off the ruins of it, over off to the left. So I would have taken this from the top of Combe Mazin, very probably, in fact, from the Buisson vineyards, because just on the edge of this, I saw that the verges on the side had not been trimmed, and B, there were various trees had been planted. So they planted all sorts of fruit trees and other trees in the hope of getting a little bit of biodiversity. And they also told me that they haven't trimmed any of the grass verges because the larks nest at ground level in the grass early in the season, and they wanted to wait for all the nesting period to be over before they did it. This is thoughtful, intelligent stuff. So there you go. Incidentally, right at the top of the cliff, there used to be a really ugly little rectangular building, which in the 70s and very early 80s was the local nightclub that all the trendy young set from anywhere around Beaune used to go to. And it had one door out of it, which led to a virtual sheer drop off those cliffs. So I suspect that not quite as many people who went to the nightclub in the early evening actually returned in the early hours of the morning. I never heard of any fatalities, but I was always intrigued by the building, which has been derelict now these 30 years. And the next picture, I think, gives us another. Yes, there's the. It is really impressive. There are a couple of other villages with a similar backdrop called Orsch and Avelle, which don't make much in the way of wine. Orsch used to make just rosé wine, made a little cooperative to do it, which subsequently became the cooperative of the Haute Côte, and is now a big business. So I think those pictures might well encourage you to go and explore the area and have a good wander around. Right, back to the map, or on to the next. Look at the map. Where have we got to? Okay, the Montlhéry sur la Velle from Eric de Suremain. I'm very sorry I haven't got a picture of Eric, because unless it was the month of February, you would see him dressed in shorts, 11 months of the year, and with a straw hat on his head. He's quite a character. He's from a sort of fairly aristocratic family, the de Suremains. Another branch of de Suremain operates out of Mercure. And another branch, are close cousins of his, who are related to the Le Fleuves and are part of the owners of Domaine Le Fleuve. So Eric's been there since, I think, 1979, I think the same time as Alain Gras. in his place, and Eric is just about handing over to his daughter, Gwendoline. I haven't met her yet, and it's been a little while since I've been to taste at the Chateau de Montelis, their building is, in the middle of Montelis, of course. Either it's called Domaine Eric de Surma, or it's known as the Chateau de Montelis. It could be either name. Wife and effect, I think his mother's vineyards came from Rully, so they have some vineyards in Montelis and some vineyards in Rully, both reds and whites, but he's much more interested in making reds, so that's mostly what gets sold under the Domaine name. And they have their main vineyard, I think the oldest vines, and the largest volume. They own half of this Premier Cru vineyard, which is called Sur la Velle. So we got the word Velle again. And Velle, I will repeat, is village. And this time the vineyard is above the village. And it's actually a continuation of here, this vineyard leading up to it is a certain vineyard, much loved by many of us, which is Volnay Clos des Chênes. So as you go over the boundary, you get into Clos des Chênes, spelled slightly differently here in Montelis, and La Velle alongside. So they've actually, in 2006, they significantly increased the vineyard area in Montelis, not the vineyard area, but the Premier Cru vineyards. So it was originally only Les Durès over here and three or four vineyards here, including Sur la Velle. They've added Les Clos on this side, and they've added some more here and here and a bit of Toisier there. We've got some work to do. I don't think we've actually got that quite right. So a little bit of Toisier, which is Premier Cru. Good. So De Surma, he's organic, he's biodynamic. He's been biodynamic for 1996, I think he started. So he was right in there, really very, very early on. They've been certified organic since 2003. I saw him one year. I think it was one of the hail years rather than the frost year, as it might be 2012 or 2013. And I said, oh dear, and I had it go. I think your area was quite badly hit. And he said, yeah, disaster, 4 hectares. I said, what, your yield is 4 hectolitres a hectare? And he said, no, I made 4 hectolitres for the entire domain. So basically no wine at all, just enough for the family to drink. Fortunately, I suspect there must be some family money behind over the long term. Otherwise, that would be pretty distressing for a small young grower starting out. Right, I haven't tried it yet. Some of you are ahead of me. It's a mix of vine age here, but quite a bit of older vines in it. Here we are. A little sample bottle. Much more bouquet. Just remind myself, aha, well, we have gone back. We're 3 years older, we're 2015. When he still wouldn't have had much of a crop because all the vineyards that got damaged, particularly the Pinot vineyards in 12, 13, 14, they didn't yield much in 15 simply because the vineyards, the vines themselves were sitting back on their haunches and just trying to stay alive and doing well. So, there's much more bouquet, and we've got a slightly denser, obviously a little bit more evolved color, and we're gonna have a wine of greater richness all round. Montelis does have more potential, especially as you can imagine, the vineyard, which is the continuation of Clos des Chênes. Yep. Rose Hip offers Alistair and Benelin. I don't know what Benelin is in my sheltered upbringing. It's definitely got a much, much greater weight of fruit. They're not much on the technobabble, this domain, but I think there will be a certain amount of whole bunch, but in a minority. So 2015, a sunny, ripe year. It's in the same pattern as 18, 19, 20, but it had not become the norm there. And it wasn't quite as much drought. Benlin is cough mixture. Okay, yes, the Linctus it was called in my day, but that was a different cough mixture because that was much more a sweet cherry aspect. 2015 is a vintage with a lot of structure. I rather tediously invented this idea that 15 was a cross between the enormous power, density and long-lasting character of 2005 and the rather more sensual, enjoyable 2010, with the idea that 5 plus 10 equals 15, and you had both. So we were pretty happy with 2015 at the time because it had not become the norm. And I'm individually very happy with 18s and 19s and 20s, but it's the fact that that has now become the norm, and we're going to be hard put to see the cool, fresh vintages again, is slight worry. So we had the two whites, which are distinctly different character. We've had the first two reds, also distinctly different character. And as time moves on, I will be about to get out my next red. For most of the tasting, I wanted to do wines from people who were in the villages or very nearby, but I couldn't resist also having a Lafond Montelie because it's one of my favorite wines. Indeed, I've pulled out of the cellar a bottle of 2006 of the same wine for my supper this evening. Yeah. Some pulled pork dish from my local producer. How long could this last, Bradley would like to know. I think this can last probably a seriously long time. The structure to me is still interfering a tiny bit with the pleasure, though admittedly I've just slurped it back without any food alongside, and with the food that would be sorted out. I have no problem in saying this will last 5 more years. My guess is it will last 10 more years. What'll be interesting is our next wine, and from a vintage which is not as structured, 2010, is 5 years older, and my expectation is it's going to be very much alive and kicking and happily with us. Right, so Montelie Les Durès. I didn't bother with a picture of, I didn't have a picture of Eric Sjoma, and I haven't bothered with a picture of Dominic Lafond because you've seen him before and we'll have him again. And we mustn't give him too much airtime, he'll get vain. So Les Durès in Montelie, it actually sits across the boundary between the two. I've just seen something I've never noticed before. You have Les Durès in Auxay, which is hyphenated Auxay Durès, and Les Durès in Montelie here. Oh, sorry, I went too far. I beg its pardon. Get rid of that. This could be unique because in almost every other situation in which you have the same name of vineyard traveling across from one village into the next village, they slightly change the writing. Either they spell it differently, which they happened here, or it's Les Durès for one and Eau Durès or En Durès or something slightly different than the other, but they haven't. Durès means hard. Durès, same word in English. And so you're not expecting a lot of love in terms of it being an easily appreciable wine. But we are on a steep slope, and it gets very steep at the top. It's east-facing, but there is a gap. Because the rivers come down through here, you do actually have a... When did that happen? Shouldn't have happened. You do have a... coming up through here, you have no hillside interrupting the early morning sun, so you will get some sun here. And so Durès is probably the best vineyard in Auxay Durès, and ditto Montelie, unless it's going to be something like Sur Lavelle over on the edge of Volnay. I mean, those are your two choices. The very top of Durès is A, extremely steep, B, no topsoil, C, the actual rock formation is different, and it's a white marlstone. So the very top of the vineyard tends to be, which is classified as village, tends to be planted with whites, and that's a valid place to plant whites. The other place where you might get whites is down here in Champfolio, and in particular, Paul Garraday, in this little bit just above my heart. You can see it's in light green because there's one tiny bit of Champfolio. It's not in Premier Cru. It's because it's in our hollowed out quarry. Paul Garraday says it clearly ought to be Premier Cru, and it's the best place to put whites because that's where he's put his whites. Otherwise, I would much rather that Montelie stayed red. The other thing that you've got here with Montelie, it really is in the form of a valley. We had an amphitheatre up in Saint-Romain, but here we're mostly in this valley inside the inverted horseshoe, if you want to call it that. Plus, you've got the hillside just below it here, going over towards Volney. But as is quite typical in Burgundy, when you get these sort of side valleys, you think they're going to be a bit cooler. You're getting cool air coming down the slope. But if it's hot weather in the summer with no wind blowing, then the sides of the valley give you a little bit of a furnace effect. You've even got a vineyard here called Au Fourneau, which is indicative of being a furnace. Personally, I'm not that much of a fan of people growing whites down there in this middle part. Good, right. Got the bottle out. Let me open it up. So we have a colour which has stayed relatively useful. We have... I haven't yet smelt it. I was just going to say, we have something which is very difficult to reform. Mark has said archetypal Burgundy. And Mark, I invite you to comment, if it's Mark, I think it is. You used not to be a great fan of Lafont Reds because you felt that they never, ever came round. It's true that he makes wine in a way which is quite strict and quite punchy. It's all destemmed, gets a bit of a cold soak beforehand. The wines are always good coloured. I've never come across since 1990, I can hardly think of a vintage, possibly 92 and 94, very light vintages, where the wines are looking a little bit too old now. But they do stay together for a long time. But they do resolve, and they do make gorgeous, gorgeous bottles of wine as they get mature. So that's the pre-discussion. So on the bouquet here, in my sample, there is the faintest bit of oxidation on the nose. But alongside that, there is a really interesting and still useful red fruit. Whether or not it's a slightly older wine and hasn't enjoyed its treatment of being turned into little sample bottles and shipped around the place so much, there's just an edge to it. Which has lost its original pristine purity. But the quality of fruit, otherwise, which, as I say, stays young, we're still in raspberry and cherry mode rather than in secondary or tertiary modes. And the length of flavour and the back of the palate, I think, are really, really good. So it's a wine which... the good news in general, not just this wine, but in general, the wines of this part of the world, you're going to get Premier Crus really well made from any of these villages, top cuvées of Saint-Romain, even more so, which are less in price than equivalent quality producers, village wines from the Volnays and Meursaults and the rest of it. So at that point, I think the top wines from these villages are representing really good value from Burgundy today. And that's not something that we find easy to say. We said it for our Aligoté Zoom for sure. And I've gone on drinking and tasting lots of Aligotés ever since. Ah. As that you said that the Lafont finish goes on like a ring cycle, that's really good news in terms of length, but are you also making comments about volume and reverberation in this? I'm hoping that you mean it as a good thing. I can think of some people who would say that a reference to wings... So. The ring cycle would not be a positive. Thank you for corroboration that it is a good thing. And I just discovered a year ago, there was a little stash, I mentioned it with a couple of other wines, but I had a case of the Monte Jerez 07, a much lighter vintage, and I've drunk about half the bottle since, and they have been just gorgeous, and Dominic was rather jealous because he hadn't got any left himself. I've got a couple of bottles of 06, which I think will probably not be quite as magical, slightly dour vintage of the reds, Côte de Beaune, but that's what we're going to have tonight with our pork. So, clearly, Montelie reds are going to offer you something more than Saramin reds. Saramin reds are about the enjoyment of the fruit, sort of in-the-moment wines. I would probably, for me, they're more the sort of spring and early summer wines, possibly to drink on their own, but really nice. Right, so Alistair's getting enthused. Right, good, good, good. So we're hearing from you, and anybody else, you're drinking wine, it doesn't have to be the wines we're having tonight, but please do let us know how you're doing, how you're going. This is a gamble. We've gone back a further 10 years to the 2000 vintage. And we've gone from Potinet Ompo. Now, the UK market saw rather more of their cousins at Domaine Ompo. Shipped until now, sadly, that Domaine. Robert Ompo was the first that people got to know well. He was always a big favourite of Hugh Johnson's, and every year in the Hugh Johnson little pocketbook, it would get excited rave reviews. And then after Robert became Michel Ompo, who continued to do the same things. Michel sadly had a stroke, no longer produces the wine. But I was chatting to somebody who said, yeah, he'd just seen Michel Ompo coming by on his bicycle through the vineyards and stopped and waved and chatted. So happily his health is better, but he's not producing wines anymore under their label. However, the cousins in Montelie, and I'm ashamed to say I have never yet been there to taste there, so I need to do this and I shall do this, but it's very, very much the same principle that they make the wine, they don't sell much, if at all, early, and they keep it back, and when they judge it's ready to drink, as it comes. So their importers tend to go by and we'll taste a few things. The importer probably doesn't get to say what he wants to taste. It's Vincent Durieux at the moment, is the fifth generation of the family, and he's the man in charge. And he will just go on bringing out bottles of things which he has stock of, which he thinks would be good to buy now. And I suspect as long as you buy a decent balance across the two colours and across the appellations, they got 8 hectares or so, and they've got Meursault, a couple of Pyrenees, Volnais, one Pommard, but they've also got Aussi d'Uresse, Montelie, Bourgoines, and so on. So I don't know the exact breakdown between all these vineyards. But this is from the lower part of Les d'Uresse, the Bas de d'Uresse. We've already looked at where the Duresses were on both sides of the border, and the Bas de Duresse a little bit lower down here. My guess in most villages which have a vineyard plus one called Bas lower down, which is sounds as though it could be pejorative, that they tend to just call it Duresse. But I'm assured that this is on the label Bas de Duresse, and it's 2000. That vintage that we all wrote off at the start saying, well, perfectly cheerful, but they're light wines, a little bit dilute, drink them the first 5 years and they'll be fine, but don't keep them. And then after 5 years, we said, you know, drink them the next 2 or 3 years, but don't keep them. And we've gone on saying, drink them in the next 2 or 3 years and don't keep them. And we're now 20 years down the road. And yeah, now we're into proper sort of tertiary flavors, if you like. The colour is still is red with a sort of brick edge at the end. Just soft and appealing, but it's got a bit of grip. It's got a bit of iron in it. There's a lot of iron oxide you find in vineyards in this part of the Côte de Beaune. And to me, the flavor that it adds to the wine is something like blood oranges. The nose says, sorry, I'm a bit old. Victor's, it sounds as though your sample might be a little bit too far gone. If you're getting sherry notes, mine has got the lightest touch of oxidation, which is not unreasonable for a 20-year-old wine sent out in sample bottles like this, but it's still predominantly about the fruit. So you may have been a little bit unlucky there, or else you're just more sensitive to it, which is also possible. Who's this? I'm no necrophiliac, but this sort of age suits me, right? Okay. But it is clearly much older, and Dominic mentions the truffly, meaty, savory flavors. Right, okay. Gamble pays off. Outside it. So I think this one's going to do quite well when we get round to doing our poll. But you know, I think some of the evenings, everything seems to work. And frankly, I feel that way about tonight's wine. So there's nothing here that's disappointed me. They're all showing what I want to show from these villages. If you are a little bit disappointed in the wines, then that will mean that this is not the hunting ground for you, because these have done what they're supposed to do, and they have been pretty much as good as we should expect from these sites at the moment. But I will reiterate, as prices go up elsewhere, as global warming has its effect, this is, for me, a pretty good place to be. And I can see the Morris Cellar developing more of these, partly because I probably shouldn't be buying wines to drink in another 35 years, and partly because I haven't earned enough in my wine trade career to be able to afford the Grand Cruise anymore. All right, so Victor, you're being specific. It's Amontillado. Well, that at least gives you a little bit of nuttiness and retains a little bit of freshness to it. So that's good. Peter has said that he doesn't want to open his 2002 Monthly Fonduras yet. I had the 99 the other day. I don't think I got any O2 left, but you certainly can drink the O2 Monthly Duras, absolutely. But good on you for keeping it. I think I remember sending it to you all those years ago. Great. We've just talked about, so these are the Premier Cruz of Oso Duras are almost entirely red. A couple of people experimented with whites. I should tell them not to when I next see them. But there are some very good reds. Sometimes they get blended together. There's no CDRS Premier Cru from the Comte d'Armand, which I like a lot. And if you continue up the valley, most of these vineyards are predominantly red as... I didn't mean to put an arrow in there. Those along here, everything along here is predominantly red, but not universally. Other producers, mostly in Oso Duras, it's people who, there are several families here, and who marry each other or themselves or whatever. You've got the Prunier family, the Lafouge family. There's also the Domaine Latour, I hear is very good. I was impressed when I went to Domaine Dicon, Christophe Dicon. Good reds, but particularly good whites, I thought. Domaine Michel Prunier Effi, white's okay, but the reds are better. Those would be some of the names in Oso Duras, plus, of course, Madame Leroy. Saramin, we talked about the three main ones. In Montilly, you've got a couple of members of the Garrido family. You've got the old Domaine Montilly Porcheret. It was Montilly Douray before and then became Montilly Douray Porcheret, and the legendary André Porcheret, I'm sorry to say, died just a couple of days ago, the former regisseur, general manager of the Hospice de Beaune. The Surmont, I've mentioned, you have various Boussets. I need to do some more work and go and see some more people in this area. I'm pleased with what I have seen. One relative newcomer I'll mention in... Oso Duras is Domaine Terre de Velle. It's Fabrice Larens. Larens is a well-known family in Beaune, who there are quite a few different Larens businesses also connected with the Leroux family. But They have recently bought the vineyard holdings of Blair Pethel, Domaine du Blair, to add to what they already had in the OCDRS area. So yeah, absolutely. There's plenty more to find out from these areas. Good. I will just try and catch up with the chats and see if we have a last. Yes, when I say the wines are tasting well because the moon is in Aquarius. And who knows? I can't remember the exact words of the song from Hair, but it could well be. We've had miserable weather, which normally doesn't help them taste well, but it could be that the stars and the planets are well aligned. Cecilia, would you like to offer us, please, our usual poll, and then I'll answer the last couple of comments on the chat. Here you are. We have six wines. You may have two votes, obviously, particularly if you've been tasting the wines. I suppose there's no reason that others who haven't been tasting the wine shouldn't put in their bids. I get to vote as well, so I am going to make my selections. Good. I've had lots which I really like. It's only allowing me to vote once, Cecilia. Did you put it up as a two-vote poll or just a one-vote poll? Maybe you could take it down and recondition it as a two-vote poll, please.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, if you could do that and then everybody can come back. And then while that's happening, I'll just see what else is happening. 2000 Clos de Beres from Emonin, that must be Sylvie Emonin doesn't make that wine if you do mean Clos de Beres rather than Clos Saint-Jacques. So perhaps it could have come from Fred Esmonin, and I haven't tasted it, can't give you a view, but I would expect it to be all right. But Comte Ligier Belair tasting, well, we should get Louis Michel to do that. I'm surprised that it hasn't already done one with 67 Pall Mall, but wouldn't that be fun to do? I will carry that back to headquarters and we'll get Louis Michel to do one. He may want to do it on his own or he may be happy to be interviewed by me. I'm going to taste there shortly, so I'll check that out. All right, so I managed to vote for two, so I could only vote for one, I must say. Someone said Trump and Biden, don't understand what you're meaning, but you can only vote for one of those. Great. We will just wait for that to come back. I would just say, without offering any political views about Mr. Trump and Mr. Biden, I would say that some of the wines you've had tonight are going to have a better actuarial chance of staying alive for quite a lot longer than two candidates in their late 70s. Mark, the poll will be back in a nanosecond. So hang on in there. Enjoy your wines. Cecilia, is it working out? If there's a problem, then we can abandon it and just go to the chat.
No, I'm here with you. I'm doing my fast.
Okay. I do like the bouquet is getting better and better, even though it's a 20-year-old wine from a supposedly not famous village. It's doing well. Oh, incidentally, I'm going to share a bit of good news for you while we're waiting, since you've made me think about it. My wife is or was American, but has abandoned the US and is British living in France. And I went and collected my carte de séjour, which allows me to stay here in Burgundy. So that's really good news. Not looking forward. And we're back. We have the poll for six. Please vote for your two. And it's worked this time, so submit as soon as you can. I hope everybody's seen the poll this time. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, end of voting. And Mark still didn't get a poll, didn't he? What he did wrong. We've got the answers up. Looks to me like everybody has scored, which is always satisfactory. I hate it when somebody doesn't got any votes at all. So the two I voted for are the two which come bottom. But I really, really liked, as you know, I voted all six of them. And I did slightly vote for Wines, which I didn't think were going to get full marks elsewhere. Alain Grant comes after that. Then on the podium, joint silver medal between Eric de Chaumin's Montelie and the Ossey d'Arras. And wretched Lafont. You can't keep voting for Lafont. It's going to be bad for him. Wouldn't want it to go to his head. Actually, he is a very level-headed person, so it's probably fine. Great. That's pretty much me finished for tonight. So pleased to see you all happy and healthy with us. I believe my next one is going to be Bon Mar on the 4th of November, I guess. We then got one on vieux vines, on old vines. I've managed to find some cuvées from vineyards all planted before the Second World War, so by definition, all at least 80-year-old vines. After that, we will have Grands Échassiers, so single vineyard, but with a number of people. Before Christmas, I'll also do a sort of Jasper Christmas special when might not be limited only to Chardonnay and Pinot from Burgundy. It's going to be some of my favorite wines over the years, producers I know really, really well, and wines that just work for me. And then in January, I should be back with 2 days in a row, early January, looking at the 2019 vintage. So as you're being asked to part with your money for 2019s, I'll do a zoom on the whites and then a zoom on the reds, telling you what to expect, a few high points, low points, stylistic points. And Alistair, I will not wear a white beard, I can guarantee you. But we should have fun all the way through. I'm thrilled with the support that we see regularly from you. Persuade a few more of your friends to come and join in. And it's onwards and upwards, as they say on Gardener's Question Time. So thanks for joining. Cecilia, thank you so much for your hosting tonight. And see you very shortly. Bye-bye.